You're listening to a message delivered at the Fountains, a United Methodist Church in Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Our reading today is from one of the seven authentic letters of Paul. And once you know which letters are the real Paul, 1 Thessalonians, Galatians, 1 and 2 Corinthians, Philemon, Romans, and Philippians, you start to recognize his vocabulary and theology. You can also understand how, for the last 100 years or so, a general consensus has emerged among biblical scholars that even this authentic letter is not one letter, but actually three separate letters that have been stitched together by a later editor. Once you see it, you can see how the topics jump around and don't really flow the way you'd expect. But in our passage today, the topic is clear: rejoicing, and not just sometimes, but always. For Paul, rejoicing is an ongoing activity, not based on particular circumstances, but as a matter of course, at all times. Which is even more remarkable when you consider where Paul was writing from. Not a monastery or a mountain retreat, not a beach on Maui with a gratitude journal and a cup of herbal tea. Prison. We can't be sure if it was house arrest or in an actual Roman jail, but what we do know is that this isn't someone writing in the midst of comfort or security. From an unpleasant and uncertain place, Paul is writing to a vulnerable, anxious community trying to figure out how to remain committed to compassion, justice, and grace in an empire that measures human worth by power, wealth, and status.
Our words of wisdom are from Philippians chapter 4, verses 4 through 9.
Rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I will say, rejoice. Let your gentleness be known to everyone. The Lord is near.
Do not worry about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God.
And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus.
Finally, beloved, whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is pleasing, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence and if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things.
Keep on doing the things that you have learned and received and heard and seen in me, and the God of peace will be with you. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
Once upon a time, Mullah Nasruddin lost his lucky gold coin. For days, he searched everywhere for it, but it was not to be found. Finally, Nasruddin fell to his knees and prayed, "Oh Lord, I've lost my lucky gold coin. I've done everything I know to do, but it's still missing. Please help me, Lord. It's my most precious possession. If you help me find it, I promise I will give half my wealth to the poor." Nasruddin opened his eyes, and there, lying almost completely hidden under his prayer rug, was his lucky gold coin. Quickly, Nasruddin closed his eyes again and prayed, "Never mind, Lord, I found it myself." How quickly we become ungrateful when we have what we're after, huh? How quickly we take things for granted in lives that, by any measure, are overflowing with comfort, ease, and health. In his memoir, When Breath Becomes Air, Stanford neurosurgeon Paul Kalanithi notes that the word disaster is derived from the Latin prefix dis, meaning a part or asunder, and the noun astro, meaning star. So it literally means star coming apart, and that there's no more apt metaphor for when he, as a neurosurgeon, shares a diagnosis of a terminal brain tumor with a patient. He says you can see the star coming apart in their eyes. In his final year of residency at Stanford Medical Center, Kalanithi, only 37 years old, received the same kind of diagnosis himself, stage 4 terminal cancer. So he wrote this profoundly beautiful and poignant memoir about his life, focused especially on his last days. What strikes the reader, I think, is the gratitude that flows from its pages. Even while he knew he was dying, he squeezed everything he could out of every day, out of every moment, especially those last days he had with his newborn daughter. What is it about pain and suffering, about injury and illness, about crisis and challenge that's such a wake-up call for so many of us? It's been said that injury and illness are our teachers, and that one of the things they teach us is to not take things for granted. Why is it so often that something has to jolt us out of our sleepwalking to remind us of how incredibly fortunate we are? Benedictine monk Brother David Steindl-Rast, who has written extensively about gratitude, writes, "Day and night, gifts keep pelting down on us. If we were aware of this, gratefulness would overwhelm us. But we go through life in a daze. A power failure makes us aware of what a gift electricity is. A sprained ankle lets us appreciate walking as a gift. A sleepless night, sleep. How much are we missing in life by only noticing gifts when we are suddenly deprived of them?" So, he suggests, look closely and you will find that people are happy because they're grateful. The opposite of gratefulness is just taking everything for granted. And here's the thing. Happiness, that oft elusive end that human beings seek, comes most often as a result of gratitude. And yet, we don't dwell on the 99% of the time when we can be grateful, and instead obsess on the 1% of the time we find ourselves in challenging situations, and we complain. Maya Angelou tells a story in her memoir, "Wouldn't Take Nothing for My Journey Now," of growing up in Stamps, Arkansas, raised by her grandmother who owned a store there. She would spend a lot of time in the store, and sometimes a customer would come in who could do nothing but complain. Well, her grandmother would motion for Maya to come over, and then she'd kind of egg the customer on to get him whining again, whether it was about the weather or the ground being too hard to plow or how sore his back was, whatever. When the customer would leave, she'd sit Maya down and ask her, "Honey, what did you hear? Moaning? Complaining? Well, let me tell you something. There were people who went to sleep last night, poor and rich and white and black, but they will never wake again. And those dead folks would give anything at all for just 5 minutes of this weather or 10 minutes of plowing. So you watch yourself about complaining. What you're supposed to do when you don't like a thing is change it. If you can't change it, change the way you think about it." And that's where Paul's little prison letter suddenly becomes a lot more interesting than a saccharine, "quit complaining, other people have it worse, rejoice always" Hallmark card about thankfulness. Because when Paul says, "whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is pleasing, whatever is commendable, whatever is excellent or worthy of praise, think about these things. He's not telling people to just think happy thoughts. The Greek word he uses is logisesta, from the same root that gives us the English words logic and logistics, disciplines that carry a sense of reckoning with something, taking it into account, considering carefully what deserves to count. In other words, Paul is doing more than giving the Philippians a list of happy thoughts to think about. He's asking them to get their accounting straight, to organize their lives around principles with actual value. And maybe that's the kind of genuine gratitude that often gets eclipsed because we're too busy making superficial lists of blessings or keeping gratitude journals or scolding ourselves for complaining. Maybe the deeper gratitude we feel is what comes naturally when we get clear about what actually counts. Sure, I was grateful that I got a clean bill of health after my colonoscopy this last week, but any level of appreciation for good health was totally eclipsed by the indescribable jolt of gratitude I felt when I got that text from my daughter. How are you feeling today after your colonoscopy? Right? If relationships count, we take fostering those relationships seriously. If truth genuinely counts, then we organize our lives around truth. If justice counts, then we practice justice. If honor counts, we treat people honorably. If beauty counts, we protect it. If compassion counts, we do what Jesus did. Prioritize compassion over whatever else might get in the way, including rules, religion, and the status quo. Then, gradually, almost as a byproduct, we begin to experience our lives differently. Because the measure is no longer what we possess, achieve, control, or consume. And that's where I think Paul would have a lot to talk about with the author of Braiding Sweetgrass, the indigenous botanist and, to my way of thinking, mystic, Robin Wall Kimmerer. Kimmerer argues that one of the great confusions of modern culture is that we've forgotten the difference between a commodity and a gift. Commodity has value because of what it can do for us. We extract it, price it, package it, use it up, and when we're out, we get more. And increasingly, we've learned to apply that way of thinking not only to land and resources, but to one another. What can this person produce? What are they worth? What can I get from this relationship? What does this community do for me? Even human beings become commodities. But a gift is different. It's not transactional. There's no IOU or some version of you scratch my back and I'll scratch yours. But a recognition that each of our lives are, from the beginning, already woven into lives and systems and communities we did not create and cannot sustain by ourselves. I breathe oxygen produced by living things I did not plant and never think about. I drink water I did not make and trust others to make it safe. I speak a language somebody taught me. I drive on roads I did not pave, thrive on stories I did not write, dance to music I didn't compose, and benefit every day from sacrifices I did not make. Long before I accomplished anything, I was already receiving gifts beyond measure and beyond my imagination to ever fully appreciate. And this is where gratitude becomes something way more than a pleasant feeling. and not about occasionally noting our substantial privileges. Gratitude is what it feels like when we realize we are participants in something much bigger than our little old selves. It's when it dawns on us that life isn't just a smorgasbord of things available for our exploitation, but an almost incomprehensible network of relationships and interconnections in which we are already a part. And that realization changes everything. Why would we spend our time and energy working for justice? Because human beings have value beyond their usefulness. Why do we care what happens to the climate? Because forests and rivers and oceans are not simply inventories of resources waiting to be converted into profit. Why do we care about hungry people, displaced people, marginalized people? Not because we've calculated what they might contribute in return, but because their lives possess value before any calculation ever begins. Every cry for justice begins right here, with the recognition that some things are more precious than their usefulness to us. And once you recognize something as precious, your relationship to it changes. You don't take advantage of it for your own benefit. You participate in its flourishing. You protect what you've learned to love. You give something of yourself back, not as payment and not because you owe the universe a debt, but because reciprocity is simply how living relationships work. We receive and we respond. We are changed by what we receive. And then we become capable of contributing something that wasn't there before. Which may be why Paul doesn't stop with, think about these things. His very next words are, keep on doing the things that you have learned and received and heard and seen in me. Doing. Because truth and justice and honor and beauty aren't abstract concepts to admire from a distance. They can only become real when you make them real. Truth becomes real when someone speaks it. Justice becomes real when someone practices it. Compassion becomes real when somebody risks putting love first. These aren't commodities we can acquire and store away. They are gifts that come alive only in relationship and generate an abundance of gratitude. And this is where Brother David Steindl Rast would want us to remember his outrageous claim that people aren't grateful because they're happy. They're happy because they're grateful. Not some kind of doe-eyed cheerfulness either. He's talking about a whole different orientation toward life. If my happiness depends primarily on accumulating enough, controlling enough, achieving enough, or protecting what I have, then enough is going to remain permanently just out of reach. But if I begin organizing my life around what Paul calls true, just, honorable, pleasing, excellent, and worthy of praise, and if I begin recognizing myself as part of what Kimmerer calls a world of gifts rather than merely a world of commodities, something shifts. Gratitude becomes less something I ought to feel and more something I discover. It's what happens when the accounting starts to work differently. Maybe that's what Paul means by logizesta. Keep account of these things. Reckon with these things. Decide what is actually worth counting, and then organize your life accordingly. Because the world offers us all kinds of ways to keep score, and most of them will leave us convinced that somebody else has more, that we haven't done enough, that we're falling behind, or that something essential is still missing. Paul proposes another ledger altogether: truth, justice, honor, beauty, compassion, whatever enlarges life rather than diminishes it, whatever draws us more deeply into relationship with others rather than shunting us off in isolation, whatever reminds us that we belong to something larger than ourselves. So, what finally counts? Paul says, rejoice in truth, justice, honor, beauty, excellence, things worthy of praise. Kimmerer says, what counts is a life that is aware of the gift of our profound interconnection. Paul Kalanithi would have us treasure every moment like it's our last. And so maybe gratitude isn't just another obligation to add to the list, but in the end, it might be what we feel when the things that really count finally really count. Be well.
Hey, and don't forget, if you like what you heard today, buy me a coffee.
Thanks, Ryan.
Anytime.
Thanks for listening to this week's Applying It to Life from the Fountains. For more information or to support this outreach with a donation, visit www.weputlovefirst.org.